All right, welcome to the Gay Men Going Deeper podcast, a series by the Gay Men's Brotherhood where we talk about everything personal development, mental health, and sexuality. I am your host, Matt Lancidell. I'm an intuitive life and spiritual coach and counselor. I specialize in teaching people how to heal toxic shame and attachment trauma and embody their authentic self so they can enjoy more meaningful connections in their lives. My areas of expertise are working with highly sensitive people, empaths, and gay men to develop a stronger sense of self-worth. Today, we are unpacking heterophobia, and we're joined by Andre Lee Wills, who's been on our show. This is your third time, so welcome back.
Yes, thank you for having me back.
Yeah, it's good to have you here. Our vibes are good. I'm excited for today's conversation. So we got a nice juicy topic to unpack. For those of you who don't know Andre, haven't met him yet virtually through the podcast, he is an empowerment coach. He uses his unique gifts and talents to offer guidance, support, and assist others in being an expression of their truest and highest self. He is adept in career coaching, life and relationship coaching, communication development, team building, and leadership development. So you're up to all sorts of good things. And I'm looking forward to tapping into your wisdom around this, and we're both going to be sharing our experiences of navigating this crazy heteronormative world as a gay person, and what if that's caused any fears for us around being around heterosexual people and stuff. So for those of you, it's pretty self-explanatory. What is heterophobia, right? We're talking about the fear of heterosexual people or straight people. And or people we perceive as straight or heterosexual. Everything is a perception unless we know, right? I don't really have a big monologue on this one, to be honest. I think it's going to be more just the unpacking of it, but is this concept of heteronormativity. And I think as gay people, if we've been handed the owner's manual of heterosexuality and we try to apply that to ourselves, this can lead to an inner conflict. It's like, okay, I have this owner's manual. It doesn't fit for me. But if I try to throw this owner's manual away and bring in the homosexual owner's manual, I'll be rejected, judged, abandoned, maybe even violence against me, these sorts of things. So this can develop into a lot of resentment towards heteronormativity. This can develop a lot of fear around heterosexual people, fear of being judged or rejected by these people. So this is a really important thing to unpack. And for most of us listening, I know there's definitely exceptions to this, but most of us have heterosexual parents, or at least they engaged in heterosexual sex to create us. So there is an element here that most of us grew up in households where the model relationships we saw were a man and a woman, and we grew up with heteronormativity being projected onto us. And this can be a challenge, a real big challenge. And I think this is the origin of the wound that we talk about when we're talking about, you know, growing up gay in a heteronormative world. It's this, right? And so what relationship do we have to the world around us being predominantly heterosexual? What do we have? What is our relationship like to that world? That's really what I want to unpack today, because I think that informs the relationship that we have with ourselves and the relationships we have with the people around us. So I think it is very, very important. And the last thing I'll say is that I see in the community a lot of sheltering and a lot of, like, I only go to gay events or gay bars, or I only do gay sports, or everything has to have the word gay before it. And I think it's great because we need that. It's very, very important for us to have our culture, our community, and to be assimilated and have belonging to that. But I also see value in the larger system. We need to participate in the larger system without feeling like we're constantly ostracized or outcasted. And maybe what I want to unpack today too is, like, how much of that outcasting is coming from reality and how much of it is coming from perception based off of our own internalized fears around heterophobia. So yeah, that's really kind of laying the foundation for what I wanted to unpack. Do you have anything you want to add or anything you want to say before we go into our questions?
No, I'm ready to get into it. Let's do it.
Okay. Wonderful. So this is the, we're going to kind of riff, but we have a little bit of a structure I wanted to share. What was life like for you as a young gay boy? When did you first realize that it was not acceptable to be gay, and how did you cope with that? And in what ways did you or do you fear heterosexual people? And how can we overcome heterophobia? So why don't we start with question number one? So what was life like for you as a young gay boy, Andre?
So I know that it was unique. I'm sure there's a lot of viewers that can relate to it, but it was unique in the sense of I probably went through a more than normal excessive amount of bullying. And it started as early as kindergarten. So what it was like being young and gay for me is I learned how to not have a voice, how to be silent, because I was getting all these very, very weird subliminal messages. I think in the gay community, we'd call it shade.
Shade. Yeah.
Shade. Everybody was being shady. And some people were just direct. So I remember being 5 years old and driving in the car with my parents and asking them, what is the F word, the derogatory word for use for gay men? Mm-hmm. And I remember my mother asking me, where did I hear that word from and why am I asking her that? And I told her, I said, well, that's what the kids at school call me.
Mm.
And she got upset and she said, it's a boy that acts like a girl and you need to do better.
Oh, wow.
So I interpreted it as though whatever they were saying must have been true and I was in trouble for it. Not realizing at that young of an age that it really hurt her to hear that and that she didn't have access to any tools in which she could protect me. So she went to blend in, assimilate. Mm-hmm. If you could just blend in and assimilate, they won't call you that. You can stop it. Like, I can't control them, so I'm going to try and control you.
Mm.
Right? And I'm actually very, very blessed to know that now at this age, because for decades, that's not what I made it. Right?
What did you make it mean?
I made it mean something is definitely wrong with me.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely don't belong. There's something absolutely wrong with me, and I don't know what it is, but everybody else does. And they keep telling me,
yeah.
And I'm just not getting it.
Yeah.
So as a result of the name calling and even that conversation, I decided, like, don't tell her anything, because if you tell her anything, she's going to get mad at you. So in a lot of ways, I gave consent for bullying to keep happening because I didn't tell anyone what was going on.
Hmm.
I viewed it as I would get in trouble, like it was my fault. I deserved what was happening.
Yeah.
And in giving them permission to be bullies, you really realize the depths of cruelty of individuals. Like, it has no limits. And it's very interesting, because when you're experiencing this, and you're experiencing this from children, it's really hard to kind of reconcile in your mind that the world is a safe place. The world just didn't feel safe. So I really tried to just be a fly on the wall, and I turned into a people pleaser to the max, and I turned into a person who was a lot more humorous on the spectrum.
Yeah.
Because those are the ways in which I found that I could get some kind of backstage pass into being able to integrate in the world where people would look past this one side of me that that they just highlighted so much.
Mm.
So, yeah. anything there for you?
Did
I say anything about it?
Well, I'm curious, like, what sort of things would people bully you for? Like, how do people know that you were gay?
You know, good question. So I remember one time, it's when it really, really hit me hard. I was in high school, and there was this particular bully who was very well known in high school, like, and he was just violent, and he was mean. And it's like the first day of biology class, and I'm like, oh God, he's sitting behind me. Like, I already had a preconceived notion about who he was, and I knew from like the first 10 minutes of being in class, like, I did not want to be in class with him.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting next to my lab partner, who was a friend of mine. Like, we went through elementary school all the way to high school together, or an acquaintance. We were cool. And I start talking to her, and I could hear him going, "What?" And then I hear him talking to the person next to me. And I realized that he started calling me gay by the inflection of my voice.
Yeah.
And that's when it hit me in that moment. Oh my gosh, the way I sound is giving me away. And it just reinforced more to be quiet. And as a result, I grew up very, very, very insecure about my voice and the inflection of my voice. So when I was in college, I did a little research and found out that you could do a voice deepening surgery.
Wow.
And I was saving up money. My plan was to save up money and get this cosmetic surgery done. And it wasn't until I actually started going out in the gay community. I remember going to a gay bar and this guy spoke, and the inflection of his voice was, to me, was even worse than mine. I remember looking at him like, whoa, why does he sound like that? And I really got like, oh, he didn't choose that. Like, we don't choose our voice, it's just what's so. But in that moment, I realized like, maybe there is something genetically going on that is inside of our community that we're not studying.
Yeah.
That could be symptomatic of who we are, and maybe finding out the answer to that might speculate that being gay is also there's also a genetic component. And then the world will have to deal with the fact that they're very aggressive towards people who are just being who they naturally are born in the world to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I started realizing that I definitely was a lot more, I didn't really understand gender. So I had an older sister. I was a lot more effeminate. I understood femininity in a certain way. I didn't really understand what it meant to be a boy in society, masculinity. So if my sister wanted to play and she wanted to play with dolls, I would just join her. I never looked at it as though I was doing anything wrong. And then when people would walk in and see us doing that, they would go in on me. And I would just look at it as though I'm just playing with my sister. This is what she wants to do.
Yeah.
So I had a tendency to be okay with doing things that society was like, boys shouldn't do that. We would jump rope. We would do all those things. So things like that also, I think, gave into the speculation.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Did you, was there a point where you realized that, okay, like, I'm gay and these people are straight? Like, did you realize that division? Or was it always kind of just based on person, like a person that was straight? Or was it like a group of people and then here you were all on your own?
So what you're asking is such an interesting question, because I really want the viewers to get that. I believe the answer to that is not the same for all of us.
Yeah, I agree for sure.
So I'm definitely going to share what it was like for me with the understanding that I know it's not like this for everyone.
Yeah.
So growing up in elementary school, I found myself physically attracted to both men and women. And I remember in second grade, we had a very interesting school setup. So the school I was in was kindergarten, first and second.
Yeah.
And then you'd go to another elementary school that was third through sixth. So we went to do a tour of this elementary school, and I'm walking through, and I remember leaving the tour, and we're literally walking from this elementary school back to our school. And I said to everyone, I was just talking to them, I said, oh my God, the men and the women were so beautiful. Like, I want to date them all.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember this guy saying, ew, the men. It was like, you can't like that. And I was like, looking at him like, what do you mean? And I remember just thinking, okay. And I learned, sometimes I'm a quick study. So I learned like, okay, don't say that. So I remember what I determined as a young kid was, whatever that feeling is you have for men, don't give it to that.
Yeah.
Don't give in to those impulses, right? And you could ride the wave on this attraction to women.
Yeah.
And the attraction to women, I would say, I felt like it dulled, especially because secretly I felt like if I acted on that attraction to men, that was going to be a wrap for that attraction to women. Because
yeah.
I knew I was more attracted to men, way more attracted to men than I was to women.
Mm-hmm.
So I really tried to bottle it and ignore it and keep it a secret and hide it and pay attention to like who was paying attention to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like really paying attention to my every move. So if I saw a guy and I thought he was cute, I have trained myself to like not to look at him for more than like 5 seconds. Just to really, and I think it hinders me in dating because if somebody's interested, they're not gonna get that clue from me because my automatic go-to is don't stare, look real quick, take it all in, then look away.
Yeah.
So when I got to college, I ended up having my first encounter with a man in college. And I will never forget, I must have been 19. And I'll never forget when we kissed. Like the voice in my head spoke to me so loud and clear and said, you're gay. Like I could no longer deny it. I felt like somebody had taken a puzzle piece and found another piece and found the perfect match and put them together.
Yeah.
And I just knew. Go ahead, man.
No, you finish. I was just going to say that's scary. It's a scary feeling when it's like, because it feels good, but it's like, it feels wrong at the same time, I can imagine.
It actually, at that point, I was no longer denying my attraction to men. Like I was watching porn and all that stuff, but I denied my lack of attraction to women.
Okay.
So when I did come out to a few people at that time, I told them I was bisexual.
Okay. Yeah. Same.
Yeah. And it felt safe. But when I actually had my first encounter with a man, I knew like, I was at home, like, I what was coming to me was, I want to build a future with him, like, yeah. I want to marry him, like, I was so down, and I just thought, if we could just have a relationship in secret,
yeah,
we would be good.
Yeah. Wow, you shared a lot there. First of all, I want to thank you for being vulnerable and setting the tone for this episode, because it gives me permission to share. But before I go into mine, I want to share just a few things that your share stimulated in me, which was this notion around voice. And I got emotional. I could feel emotions swirling in me when you were sharing, because I remember having that same experience. And I don't know if I still have it. I think I do sometimes, but like a lisp, a little bit of a lisp. It's very, very mild, but I had it stronger when I was younger. And I went through a period where I didn't have internalized homophobia up until I was probably around, I don't know, maybe 10, something like that. When I first started realizing it, like it was like, there was something wrong. I always knew that it wasn't like normal what I was feeling, but I never thought that it was bad or wrong up until I started to experience messages in the media and like to be able to really fully put it together. But I remember like, you know, when that point hit I was like trying to make my voice deeper and I was trying not to lisp. And I did the same thing with my hips. I remember I would like not try and swoosh with my hips. So I would walk really rigidly. And the impact that had on me, well, with my hips is I now have lower back pain and I harbor a lot of my stuff in my hips. And it just, you know, I'm a firm believer in the psycho meets the soma, and there's all sorts of stuff that can happen when we're not processing the psychology of things, and it lands in the body and it stays stuck there. And my hips literally are rigid. They're tight constantly. So it makes sense. And then I never put two and two together until you shared that. And that's probably why I'm emotional thinking about that is, I started singing recently and I've been really struggling with sharing my voice publicly. And I think this is where it comes from. I had the conversation with my friend yesterday. She came over and we were sitting on my couch and she's like, where does that come from? Like, why are you so afraid to share your voice? And I couldn't pinpoint it. I was like, I'm not sure exactly. Maybe it has to do with femininity and I see singing as more feminine. That probably has something to do with it. But this, I think I learned how to be self-conscious. And I say that with the term like self-conscious, yes, insecure, but self-conscious, like self-monitoring. I'm very self-monitoring because of that. Cause I'm always, you know, I would talk when I was a kid and then I'd look at the person to see if they could tell that I was gay based off of what I just said. And this was a constant thing that I was doing. So I developed like almost like a very strong ego mechanism that was always monitoring people's reactions to me so then I could know if they were gay or if they knew I was gay or not. Right. So I could never just sink in and settle into the moment and be who I wanted to be. And this started when I was like pretty young and it disturbed the development of my authentic self. And I think that's why I do the work I do, you know. So that was one piece of it. And then this other piece around, you know, you talk about or what you made me think about was this nature versus nurture debate around like, you know, are we born this way? Is it a genetic thing? And I know for me, for 100% a fact that I was born gay. My very first sexual feeling that I had was towards a boy when I was like 5 years old. So this isn't something that, you know, like happened to me, like when I was a kid or something. Like I just know that this is who I am. And this is how I was born to be. And, I'm not going to speak for everybody for sure. And that's why I speak for myself. This is my experience. And I know some people believe that it's a choice and they choose to live a gay lifestyle and whatever. And that's their prerogative. I think everybody's entitled to live their journey. Right. But I do, you know, a lot of my experience as a young boy, I remember I celebrated dancing around in my mom's high heels and pretending like I was gay and talking in gay voice with my sister. And we would laugh and it was hilarious. You know what I mean? And I just had this very vivacious, flamboyant, like caricature inside of me, you know, and this like alter ego. And it was very playful. And then once I hit that internalized homophobia stage where I was like, oh, this isn't good. That obviously went away quick. And I learned how to repress everything. And so, you know, my experience of life as a young gay boy was characterized by a lot of fear of being exposed. So there was this energy of hiding. And I was very, very hypervigilant as a child and then into my teen years. I was extremely hypervigilant, always on the lookout. Like I said, self-monitoring, but like having to cover up if I ever looked at porn or having to, you know, it was just constantly, I developed that unsettled energy in me and I still have it in me. You know, it's this very, very, and I think that's trauma for me. It's a trauma and a fear response of being caught. So, and then it developed into toxic shame. It was like, there's something wrong with me. I bought into that message in such a big way. And I would compare myself to all the straight boys around me. And I was different on the inside. And I knew that. But I played the game hard to be just like them. So I got into sports. I rode motorcycles. I did all the things that I thought I had to do to fit in with these people. But I always knew in the back of my mind something was different about me. And it's a really big thing to carry around. You know what I mean? Like, I think I kind of just toughed it out. But like, when I think about like my inner child and I go back to this boy, like, he was under so much stress and he was under so much pressure and he was in so much pain. You know what I mean? And I think, and this is the work, this is what I'm undoing. And I have been undoing for like a decade, if not longer, and meeting him and retraining him, reparenting him that it's okay to be who he is after like decades of hearing from the world around me that it wasn't okay to be who I was. So, and then, you know, if I were to reflect on this experience as like me now, there's a lot of anger and a lot of rage around that for me, because it pisses me off that I had to hide who I was. Because what a beautiful experience being able to be your authentic self and have the world mirror back to you that you're beautiful. Like, I got ripped off of that experience because of heteronormativity. And that pisses me off. There's a lot of anger around that I feel like, you know, how dare the world rip off a young, innocent child of the ability to be able to feel secure and safe in this world, you know, for something that he didn't choose. Right. So I think that's my anger. That's where I'm at. And I'm still negotiating with that. And what does it mean to me? I've healed a lot of it, but I still sometimes have that energy coming through, and it's definitely a rage inside me that's like, fuck you to the world, you know? Yeah.
You said some things that I just want to quickly address. I want to be responsible for some things.
Yeah.
I particularly if anyone that is watching this is heterosexual.
Yeah.
Because one of the nuances that I think is hard to describe or hard to express, especially when we talk about an internalization.
Yeah.
Is that specifically with the LGBTQ community, it's like an over obsession or fixation in trying to fit into a majority culture, which is heterosexual.
Yeah. Yeah.
That anger that you talk about, it's really maddening in the way that, you know, the British would use it, like, you'll make yourself crazy.
Yeah.
Because you're literally moment to moment, day after day, trying to compose yourself in a particular way so that the world doesn't know who you really are. So, you know, if anything, I think that is missing that I don't think that a lot of heterosexual people understand about our community is the torment. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that they don't deal with their own tormentation or their own internalization. Mm-hmm. It's just, it occurs as different in our community because people who are homophobic do their worst to make us present.
Yeah.
To our differences, and have the privilege of sometimes getting away with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a lot of times getting away with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, when, and I try to be careful because I know that sometimes the word privilege can be triggering for people nowadays, because we use that word so much, especially politically.
Yeah.
But when we say a majority privilege, when I say like heterosexuals, their sexuality is a majority privilege, it's just an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean by privilege. It's just an advantage. Yeah. When the world naturally assumes that most people are heterosexual, There's a comfortability in having conversations that a heterosexual person that can have that for a person who is not heterosexual may be scared to have or scared to engage in.
Like,
are you seeing anyone right now?
Yeah.
Are you
married?
Who are you dating?
Do you have kids?
And these are typical questions that are not inappropriate questions to ask a person.
Mm-hmm.
And for people in our community that are in different spaces with dealing with their sexuality, they can sometimes be the most invasive questions, especially because a lot of people who are homophobic or curious about sexuality, we know when you're using it to try to figure out what our sexuality is. We know when you're asking us, not because you think that we have a girlfriend, but because you think we're gay and you're hoping that, you know, by asking the question, you'll get an answer to your unanswerable question. And lastly, you know, with that whole genetics, it's a whole nother conversation, it's a whole nother podcast.
For real.
But, you know, that genetics versus environment, you know, I just want to put out there, like, nobody ever considers that it's both. We always try to put it or is or or.
True,
or It probably is both.
Yeah, you know? There's definitely components for sure.
Yeah,
I fully agree. And I try my best to always look at life through that lens. Like I dance in the gray a lot, for sure. The one thing I wanted to point this out too, because I know we have a small heterosexual audience that follows and some female that identifies as heterosexual. And the privilege that I think you're speaking about, it's like, you know, for me, I live in Canada and I have access to everything that a heterosexual person has. So it's not a systemic privilege. It's a nuanced privilege. It's like I can't walk down the street and hold my partner's hand without being in a constant state of hypervigilance. Am I going to get attacked? Is somebody going to throw something at me? Are people going to spit on me or yellow up, faggot out the window? Like that's what I'm talking about. And I think you're talking about when you talk about privileges, we are more subject to torment for expressing who we are authentically. And I think that's the things that some heterosexual people can overlook, because they just don't even really see that this is a privilege to walk down the street and hold your partner's hand and not have to worry. You know what I mean? And not being able to celebrate love and not having gone to go through that process in, say, high school or junior high school, where you can date and flirt and have fun and like develop that side of who you are without it being inundated with shame and fear. That's the privilege I speak about. And I think that's where a lot of you know, gay people or homosexual people are like angry, right? Because we feel like we got ripped off from being able to develop in the ways that we wanted. So I think that's, if you're a heterosexual person listening to this, like that's what we just want you to understand. And it's not like I'm looking for you to apologize to me or anything like that. It's not about that. It's just simply understanding that our experiences are different. And there, that with that comes the minority stress, and the minority stress can add on anger and resentment and these sorts of things. So I think it's normal. Okay, so I'm curious for you, when did you first realize that being gay was not acceptable, and how did you cope with it?
Gotta be somewhere between 4 or 5, very, very early on.
Mm-hmm.
My parents are, you know, extremely religious. I come from a very religious family. I was raised Pentecostal,
okay,
which is a denomination of Christianity.
Yeah.
And my parents never used bad language. Still to this day, I can count on one hand how many bad words I've ever heard my parents say. But I would always hear them say the word faggot, which is, that took something, because I don't do well saying that word. But there was a tone to it. Like, there was a tone of hatred, disgust. And it was also so, at the time, so it wasn't so socially taboo to say the word and have that meaning, that they didn't see or hear anything wrong in saying it. That's, it was like saying, I'd like a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. It was just so socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. And I notice now in the millennium, you'll see, like, you know, they'll even blur over that word the same way they'll blur over a curse word on public programming. Mm-hmm. That wasn't always the case.
Yeah.
That was not always there. So, and it wasn't always the case that you would get in trouble for using that word. So when I would hear that word being used and the malice and the tone behind it, I was like, whatever that is, it is absolutely wrong. It is absolutely wrong. So I did the best that I could do to force myself to be as heterosexual as possible.
Yeah.
And at the same time, that's why people pleasing gets very dangerous, because there's those people who would say, you need to be this way, you need to not be that way. Mm. And then in trying to be who you feel that the world is telling you to be, there's always that group of people who are saying, you're not keeping it real. You're really gay, and I'm disgusted by the fact that you're trying to be straight. Yeah. Because this is not who you are. And it really is distressful to constantly be told who you are. That's, yeah, that's the dangerous stuff. That's the psychological danger.
Yeah.
Is the audacity that people have where they will tell you who you are.
Yeah.
And even if they're telling a truth, right? Because those that were calling me gay, they were right. You know, they weren't, it wasn't a lie. It was the fact that labels are not okay unless a person accepts the label and tells you, this is how you can identify me.
Yeah.
That's why there's this big debate, a war in the vanities over labels and pronouns. Because everybody wants the right to identify how they identify and be respected as that. Mm-hmm. Even a person who had sex with the same sex and says, I'm not gay, they even want the right to be honored as not being gay. Mm-hmm. Even if they are partaking in gay acts.
Yeah.
So, you know, so how you kind of handle it, or how I handled it, is you do whatever you possibly can do from as early as you figure out it's wrong, mm-hmm, to not be that. And then there's the weird miracles, the unique leaders out there who say, I don't care what anybody says, especially at a young age. And they say, this is who I am.
Yeah.
You deal with it. And those are like my heroes. Because
yeah.
They're the ones who made me realize, like, wait a minute, I didn't have to accept what people were telling me.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, I took that on, didn't I?
Yeah. Well, and that's where we got to take responsibility, in my opinion, because one of the, you know, you look at one of the trauma responses, because what we're talking about is traumatic, in my opinion. Like, it causes trauma. Being minority stress is a form of trauma. And when we have like this experience of people telling us that we're different, and we buy into that, and it becomes traumatic, it's hard for us to, I just lost my train of thought. I hate when that happens. what was it? Oh, about minority stress. What were you saying before that? You said something and it stimulated my thought. When we were talking,
we have to be responsible for the fact that we.
It all came back. So we have to take responsibility for that, because I do think it's a trauma, what we go through. And then one of the trauma responses for that is fawning, which is people pleasing, right? And then we become susceptible to people telling us who we are. How do we heal that? Well, we got to take responsibility. We got to reclaim that power that we gave them. We got to pull it back into ourselves, right? So, and what I see a lot in our community is this victim mentality of, I'm going to keep fighting for gay rights until the world around me changes. And they're not actually taking responsibility for the individual that is looking for the world to change. And I think it's both. Again, we're talking in this gray space, but you can't expect the world to change around you when you're not willing to change within, right? Because we chose to a certain degree to subscribe to that. It's like, okay, cool, you're going to project that onto me. I get to choose whether or not I take it in or not. Part of this process and the healing comes from unsubscribing to the things that we bought into, right? And that is, I just think that's so, so important on this journey, right? Yeah. Do you feel complete?
I'm complete. I'm checking it out, because you didn't realize you're going on a roller coaster ride today.
Yeah, I know. I'm feeling it. I thought about this question, like, when did I first realize it was not acceptable being gay? And nothing really came to me. And I was trying to think if there was an actual point where this happened, and there wasn't like a specific memory. I do have a memory, and it actually came up when you were sharing, which was really cool. And I remember watching the movie Philadelphia. Did you ever watch that movie with the
I'm familiar, but no, I haven't, but Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington.
Yeah, and it's all about being gay and HIV and stuff. And I just remember when I watched that when I was younger, and I internalized this belief that if you're gay, you just have HIV, you have AIDS, and you'll die. I didn't think that you actually had to go through the act of having unprotected sex. I just thought that if you were gay, you would have AIDS and you would die. And that for me was like super scary, because I went through this whole thing of like, well, I can't be gay because I don't want to die. And it was like this really, you know, and I don't even remember how old I was. I must've been like 7 or 8 or something, obviously not old enough to understand what was, you know, that it wasn't real. And that, so that memory came in. And then a lot of the memories that I have around, internalized homophobia, or sorry, I should say homophobia, was like in like grade school, when kids would use the word faggot and use it as in a derogatory term. But nothing really stands out. But I think I also was really, really good at playing the part of being heterosexual. Like, I played on, you know, many heterosexual hockey teams growing up. I all my friends were heterosexual, and no one really knew, to be completely honest. And once I got older, started hanging out with women more and starting to like honor more of my authentic self, I think people started catching on. But in those really like earlier formative years, I don't think anybody knew, because I wore the mask of masculinity really, really tight to my face, and I just would never let anybody see. But that's also really exhausting. You know what I mean? It took a lot, a huge toll on me to wear that mask. And, you know, and I do actually think, if you think about it, there's a mask of heterosexuality too. It's like, you know, playing the part of being straight. And that's a really heavy mask to carry around too, because we're not really, we're not meeting our authentic desires, right? So we're never feeling quite satiated.
You said something that was so powerful that I thought about earlier that I do want to address, which mm-hmm. is when we create norms, or we look at norms or things that the majority does, the danger in that is that it gives room for assumptions, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if the majority of the gay male community subscribes to being a feminine or femininity. Mm-hmm. It's just a tool in which people use so that they can identify and label.
Yeah.
Right? However, the privilege of not being identified as a feminine is you can blend in. However, the disadvantage is that people don't seem to understand or realize that effeminate behavior is not the litmus test, the standard to identifying someone's sexuality.
Yeah, exactly.
There you are presenting as masculine on the hockey team. But guess what, everybody?
Yeah.
And what there is to consider is Matt is not the only one that is probably doing this.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the things too, and I also want to be responsible for, is in the danger of coming out as bisexual and not being bisexual, is we erase the bisexual community and really don't understand the prevalence of that community as well.
Totally. Yeah.
So there are even guys that are on that hockey team that are dealing with issues of, well, I like both, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
Or they're masculine presenting and they're like, I'm in the wrong body, I'm transgender.
Yeah.
I was meant to be a woman. So, you know, the danger of how we use these labels to kind of protect ourselves, like, okay, that guy must be gay, so he's off limits. We use them to protect ourselves. However, they're not really doing what you think they're doing. And the honest truth is there is a reluctance and resistance to doing the work of actually getting to know people and then determining who a person is based on knowing them,
yeah,
not based on assumption. Because I deal with a lot of heterosexual male clients who are just sensitive.
Yeah.
And also hide their sensitivity.
Yeah.
Because they do not want to be labeled as gay, because yeah. They're not.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's what people take the behaviors and attach to someone, and they're 100% heterosexual, and they're scared to cry in front of people because yeah. They think you're gonna think they're gay because they do.
Yeah. Oh. Like so toxic.
And they're just human beings like the rest of us. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, exactly. On a spectrum too. Like you look at in the gay community, there's very, very masculine, very, very feminine, very, very insensitive, very, very sensitive. Right. It's a spectrum. And I think we gotta take it out of this sexuality spectrum and put it as like just humans. Like there's a continuum of human beings that are, some are more sensitive, some are less sensitive, some are more masculine, some are more feminine. And I would love to see the world head in this direction of viewing people less based on gender norming and stereotyping, and allowing people to just be the expression that they are meant to be or that feels authentic to them. Right. So, okay, I want to move on to the next question. In what ways do you fear heterosexual people?
This is a really tough question.
Because
it has changed as I've matured.
Yeah.
First and foremost, there's a power that comes from knowing who you are. Mm. Let me just state that first and foremost, right? Especially when you hear people telling you to come out of the closet, they're not trying to put you in danger, and it could be dangerous.
Mm.
It's just that when you know who you are, it's one of the ways in which you take your power back. Because now if you call me gay and my response is, yeah,
that's sure what I am. Yeah.
it totally throws them off. Yeah. Because the intention is to go after your esteem, your an insecurity, right? So now that I am more comfortable in my sexuality, I'm less heterophobic.
Yeah, me
because
too.
It is what it is. You know, you may not be ready for what I'm putting out there, but guess what? I'm gonna give it to you anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm at a point where if people don't know that I'm gay by assumption, I think it's weird.
Yeah.
I'll be like, oh, you don't know. The other day a woman hit on me in the grocery store and called me her husband. And I was like, oh, snap. Like, she really doesn't know. But I told her, I said, you know what? You're finally addressing me the appropriate way. Go ahead and keep doing that. Because my ego loved it. Now, to really get into the question, so how do you deal with heterophobia? How did it come about? So I think there are stages to this, right?
Yeah.
You know, you grow up around heterosexual people, you adapt, and that's the norm. So you accept people as they are. I think it comes a little bit easier when you're a minority to accept the majority than for the majority to accept the minority, right? And then I think I went through a phase where I was very angry and didn't have the language. I'm not angry, or I wasn't angry with heterosexual people. I was angry with homophobic people. And I was angry with the fact that it seemed like the majority of the homophobic people were heterosexual. Right? So the issue, the first issue was homophobia. Homophobia was the source of my anger.
Exactly, me too. And
homophobia took away my access to the beauty of the heterosexual population. It made me cautious, judgmental. I remember one time a coworker, it was after hours, and I went into her room and she was playing Christian music, and I dipped out of there. And she pointed out, she said, ever since that day you came in the room and you caught me listening to Christian music, she said, you have acted very different towards me.
Yeah, interesting.
And at the time I thought, she's probably homophobic just because she was religious.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And you lose access for a long time to religion and the beauty that is religion, you know. You know, religion stems from spirituality. It's just the traditions, the rituals that go along with spirituality. So spiritual people will be like, I believe. And religious people will say, I believe. And here's how you pray. They'll give you the exact tools. So I avoided all religious people. I started to develop a hatred for them. Didn't matter if you were Christian, Jewish. I wasn't hateful in the fact that I wasn't going to go out and burn down churches. I was hateful in the fact that I was irrationally cautious and isolated them before they could isolate me.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Right? Then there was a really bad phase where I hated women. Like, women were the source of the problem. The heterophobia started to target women because I didn't have access to them. I couldn't be normal. So I started to blame them for my sexuality because of some of the negative experiences that I had with them. And because of the one thing that I feel that a lot of women get away with that we never talk about is toxic femininity.
Yeah.
Like, toxic masculinity is on blast, but we never talk about toxic femininity.
What does that look like for you? I'm curious.
So it's a privilege that women have that they abuse. So for example, I remember women would be sometimes particularly violent towards me and sometimes physically violent, knowing that he's a guy And if she hits me back, that he's the one that's going to be in trouble, not me. So I've come along women who were really, I started to attract women who were really aggressive and toxic. And I started to attract them because I felt like I needed someone to blame.
Interesting.
I needed someone to blame for the fact that I was not heterosexual, and they were the ones to blame. And if they weren't a certain way, then maybe I'd be attracted to them. Right. So then I went through a phase of just women were the enemy. And then I think the more work you do to accept who you are, then you start to re-embrace and re-indoctrinate yourself into the heterosexual community. And then you start choosing. And you start choosing the ones that are not homophobic. And then you realize, oh, okay, this works. Like, there's harmony. And I think part of accepting yourself is accepting the fact that they are not in the LGBTQ spectrum. So you can't ask for certain things. So in me not being attracted to women, when I see heterosexual people, there's times when I see men do things because they're attracted to women, and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't understand it. Or they will look at a particular woman, they'll be like, Andre, I want to date her. And I'll be like, why? Like, to me, she's not attractive, right? And I just could not understand, what do they see in them? And then it hit me one day, like, well, if I feel this way, that's how heterosexual people feel about me. So they were trying to insult me when they would ask me questions like, why are you gay? They generally didn't understand, like, I don't get it. I've been attracted to the opposite sex my whole life. How did, what happened? Like, they're looking for an answer because they don't get it. Just like, I don't get, well, how is it that you end up being attracted to the opposite sex? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. If it wasn't a norm, I would think there's something wrong with them. I would be exactly the same way. If LGBT was the majority, I would look at heterosexual people like,
what are y'all doing?
Oh my God, we need to exercise the heterosexual Adam.
I love it.
So, you know, there's a point where you have to get that they don't understand you, just like you don't understand them, and you have to leave this room for growth. Especially because you might not have signed up to be the gay representative of the whole community. But they signed you up for it.
Oh,
so,
I hate that. I hate it.
Well, who you're being, you got to always get the impact. There's an impact in who you're being, regardless of whether it's in this, the context of this conversation or other conversations, is that we have to be responsible for who we're being. So if you are LGBTQ and you're a jerk, and somebody is interacting with you for the first time and have never dealt with someone in the community, you run the risk that they're going to look at the entire community as if
it's true.
They're like you.
But I also don't want that pressure. I don't want that pressure either, because I'm a firm believer that if somebody's that narrow-minded that they're going to view one person and then lump that into a whole community, I will never be able to control that person's perception ever anyway. So I don't take on that pressure, in, you know, from my perspective, but I see what you're, where you're coming from, because our actions create unconscious biases in other people. But I'm an individualist, and I think people need to take responsibility for their unconscious bias, as opposed to just expecting the world to, you know, be how they want the world to be around them. You know what I mean? So I play devil's advocate on that one, but I see your point 100%.
Consider the bias as security, as a defense mechanism, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, my understanding is when we were cavemen and we didn't know any better, we might walk up to a lake and say, okay, there's water here. And then an alligator pops out and kills you. And now it's like we live with this fear of, okay, there's a chance you could die going near the lake.
Yeah.
So you want to be cautious.
Totally.
Sometimes the biases that people create are within creating safety. So it's like I'm meeting this gay person for the first time and I've heard different things, or I know this is not a norm. So let me try to embrace them. And then they have a bad experience.
Yeah.
So now what they create is, this is not safe. And that's what people have to get, is the human part. Like, we all do that to some capacity.
Yeah,
exactly. And to your point, it takes a great level of growth, a great level of life experience, a great level of wisdom to finally realize, like, oh, everyone's an individual.
Yeah.
Even in dating, like, people will date somebody, break up, and then they'll get in the next relationship and say, this person reminds me of my ex, and they ruin the relationship. So they're bringing in the baggage of that label of, anybody who does this, they're going to do harm to me.
Yeah.
Right? So it takes a lot of work and a lot of evolution to actually see people as, it's really a return to being a child again.
Yeah.
Because children naturally can see people as individuals.
Yeah, it's
we
true.
We have to go backwards in order to go forwards.
Yeah, we got to undo the stories. Yeah. All right. So in what ways do I fear heterosexual people? So believe it or not, I never have had any issues with women. Women have been my safe haven. So I would say most of my friends are heterosexual women. And I now have more heterosexual friends than I do gay friends, for the most part. But I have all types of friends. But I would say where fear did show up for me with heterosexual people would be heterosexual men. I projected onto them that they would think I was disgusting, that they would judge me, bully me, outcast me, shame me, all that stuff. And yeah, there's probably truth to the stereotype for sure, but I projected that onto them. And then I learned to fear them. And whenever I was around heterosexual men, I would close down. My sacral chakra, or my solar plexus chakra specifically, it would just close down. My heart would close down, and I would just go into this real stoic, rigid energy. And I would not be expressive. I would not move too much and be expressive that way. And I just wore the mask of masculinity and heterosexuality really, really tight to my face. And it's interesting though, because if you look at the mainstream straight culture within men, it is that. I was embodying what I thought I had to, which is that's what they feel like they have to embody too. So you look at the way heterosexual men interact with each other, and it's like so bro, so performative, very hyper masculine. I don't use the word toxic masculinity. I'm just not a huge fan of it, but I do see hyper masculinity and performative masculinity as like the way that men bond. And a lot of heterosexual men, I see them hiding behind the idea of what masculinity is. And it's a very rigid definition of what masculinity is, according to this. And I'm speaking mainstream, I'm speaking generally. So I understand that there's on each ends of the spectrum, you know, you look at conscious communities where they're doing men's groups and stuff, they're exploring, you know, the polarities of masculinity and femininity and what that means. So I do think there's a lot of heterosexual men doing a ton of great work out there in this space, but like the culture of masculinity, it needs some major refining in my opinion. I want to be part of that. So, but now I don't really have that anymore. I think maybe a little, a hair, like let's say if I'm around a really cute straight guy, I might get a little shy or like a little kind of like insecure or something like that. But for the most part, no. I did a lot of really beautiful work around this with a few of my really close male friends that are heterosexual, and I actually find it easier to be friends with straight men because there's not that attraction component that comes into play ever. And it's just like, it's like a brother. It feels like a brother. You know what I mean? And I really like that. So I tend to be very drawn towards heterosexual men for that reason. And for the most part, I find heterosexual men are quite drawn to me too. So I think a lot of this stuff, I don't really have it anymore. And that's why I wanted to create this today too, is to talk a bit about, you know, how it did show up for me, maybe some of the little ways that it's still showing up, but for the most part, it's been healed, or I guess faced maybe. But I want to know from you, how can we overcome heterophobia? Like, if you were to offer your wisdom or your experience to the listener viewer, like what would you say is some ways that people can overcome this if they do notice this in themselves?
Great question. So my answer to that is the same answer to how can we overcome homophobia?
Yeah, exactly.
Anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Gender discrimination.
Yeah.
Our racism, which is emergence.
Yeah.
So, you know, if somebody told me they really wanted to learn how to speak a foreign language, I'd say, okay, well, just go there and live there for 6 months to a year. Mm. And by the time you come back, you'll have some fluency in that language. Anyone that you find is not homophobic, it's because they know someone who's in the LGBTQ plus community.
Yeah,
and they
exactly.
have a relationship of some yeah. sort.
Yeah, love. Love is what converted them, usually.
So when you're heterophobic, I think it points to a period of resentment towards homophobia, a period where you are trying to isolate yourself or separate yourself from heterosexual people because you blame the entire culture for those that are homophobic, mm-hmm. which you may actually be surprised are the minority.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you want to find yourself in a situation where you are around heterosexual people who are not homophobic.
Yeah.
And you will fall in love and you will actually appreciate not only them, but you'll find more power and appreciation for being in the LGBTQ plus communities.
Because
there are things in which they deal with that we don't have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And you'll be like, thank God I'm gay.
Yeah.
You know, there's times when I am maybe talking to one of my heterosexual male friends and he's like, ah, I need to go to the grocery store and get some feminine products for my girlfriend. And I'm like, I don't have to do that. Or he may come to me seeking advice because he doesn't understand why he and his girlfriend are arguing because he's treating her like a bro.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you do know that women speak a different language, right?
Yeah.
Like they do. Like, yeah, they do. That's not the language you want to use.
Yeah.
So, you know, you will also find a whole new, it's a source of finding a whole new love for yourself as a person in the community.
Yeah.
Because you can appreciate the fact that you get to opt out on certain trials and tribulations that they have to experience and choices that they have to make that you don't.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, to just reiterate and bring it all full circle, if you're feeling like you're dealing with some heterophobia, if you feel like you're looking at your parents and you're feeling resentment towards them, realize they don't understand you just as much as you don't understand them.
Yeah.
So you want to give them some grace and give them some time. And when they come to you with questions, do your best to bracket and put to the side any feelings of insult. and answer their questions, because now they're the child. They're coming to you asking you about the birds and the bees.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's just as awkward as a conversation for them
yeah.
as it was for you to ask them certain questions when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think I'm complete with that. I think that's my answer for that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. I like it. And I'll second most of what you said. I think, you know, if I look at homophobia, I think that is why we have heterophobia. It's kind of like the different side of the same coin, right? I think internalized homophobia is going to make us think that everyone around us shares that same ideology around gay people, right? So I think as we heal our own internalized homophobia, I think we will heal the heterophobia, because I think it's the self-rejection that is making us fear and project our internalized homophobia onto heterosexual people and say, you must think I'm disgusting or hate me, or you must think there's something wrong with me because I think there's something wrong with me, right? It comes from the heteronormative system. Yes, it came down onto us, and then we internalized it, and then we project it back on. So it's just like almost like a mudslinging. So we eventually have to just do our own healing work, learn how to love ourselves, stop rejecting ourselves. And guess what? You stop giving a shit. I remember when I hit that point where it was like, I now just own the fact that I'm gay. I tell everyone and anyone, I don't care. And I lead people into my experience with confidence, and people are always led to seeing me confidently. Like, never do I have an issue with this, because I show people who I am and I'm proud of it. And they're like, that's amazing. You know what I mean? So that would be my first thing. Second thing would be stop sheltering ourselves. We have to stop sheltering ourselves in the gay community and like only doing gay things. And, you know, like put yourself in environments where it's mixed, co-ed even, and like mingle with people, you know, connect to the humanness of this beautiful life experience, not just the gayness of this life experience. Cause I think we're limiting ourselves in such a big way. And monitor assumptions, because I think we all make assumptions, like you said, around religion. And I know a lot of religious people who are very affirming. And, you know, if I were to just, you know, splash paint on all of them and say, you're all like this, I'm missing out on millions of people in this world that are amazing to connect with. And I'm so we got to monitor our stereotypes, I think, in a big way. Yeah, I think I feel complete too.
Yeah, and the number one thing that I want to end people with is this. You will become what you most fear. And just because it shows up differently doesn't mean it's not the same.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a point in my life where I have to be responsible for that I was a bully.
Yeah.
Because I dealt with bullying, I feared it, I became it. I just wasn't aggressive. I was passive aggressive. So if you're dealing with a resentment towards an unfair treatment, it's not like it's not valid. You just want to be very careful, because you will become heterophobic, and you will become, and you will think it's valid, and this is some kind of vengeance you're getting. But every pain that you have been through, you have now done it to someone else.
Yeah.
And now you have to be responsible for the damage you have done.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I'm all about, you know, I'm at a stage in my life where I'm all about taking responsibility, and it's heavy sometimes and it's a lot. But hey, it's the only way towards healing, in my opinion. Like, you can't heal if you're not willing to take responsibility. So it's big stuff. It's big energy. It's emotional maturity. It's humility. It's all the things that our ego just hates. But it's the way towards liberation, at least from my perspective. So
agreed.
Yeah. So how can people find you if they want to connect with you?
Okay, so I would say the best way is through LinkedIn. Okay. Now, I sent you my LinkedIn. I don't know if you're going to put it in the bio below.
I will. Yeah. I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah.
I also have a website. It is still being constructed.
Yeah.
But, you know, keep it in your pocket. It is raisingvibrations.com.
Raising Vibrations Coaching.
Coaching.com. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's a new address, everyone. So I'm still getting used to it.
Yeah. It's all going to be in the show notes. So,
yeah. And it's not www. It's HTTP. RaisingVibrationsCoaching.com.
Yeah.
And as it continues to be in construction, please continue to look forward or send me messages if you're looking for me, because you will be able to go through the website and set up a consultation and sign up for offerings and coaching with yours truly.
Yeah. Yeah, this won't be the last time you're on the podcast. I just love you. You're a brother of mine, and I'm really excited and happy to walk this life with you, because you're amazing. I just love you.
I feel exact the same way.
I know you do.
That masculinity helps me from expressing myself. You don't want to cry on the podcast. Yeah. Now.
You did good today. We both were feeling a little bit apprehensive of being vulnerable today. So just to kind of share from behind the scenes, and we both did good. I'm very proud of you. And it's, you know, it's not easy sharing this stuff. It's deep. It runs deep in us. But I'm very proud of you. And I know people are going to benefit from hearing you sharing today. And so until next time, till we conjure up our next idea.
I look forward to it.
Me too. All right, listeners, viewers, thanks for tuning in to another episode. Please drop your comments on YouTube. And if you're on listening on your favorite podcast platform and you enjoyed what you heard, leave us a 5-star rating, because it does help our podcast get into the ears of people that need it. So, and we'll see you in the next episode. Take care. Bye.